M&K Talk YA now presents Sky in the Deep, Part 1 by Adrienne Young.
M&K Talk YA.
I'm Marissa Snyder.
And I'm Kitty Bradford.
And this is our young adult fiction podcast. And this week we started a new book by an author we've never read before. This is Sky in the Deep by Adrienne Young.
And this is her first book, I think.
Yeah. Well, I think she's definitely written a lot of other books, but I think this might be her first published book.
Okay.
And it's part of a companion series, I guess I would say. So there's two books. The first one's called Sky in the Deep. The second one is called The Girl the Sea Gave Back. But they're not sequels, right?
I don't think so. I was getting confused because, like, on Goodreads it had them linked, but then I'm curious to read the second one or, like, see if it's, like, maybe it's the same world but just different characters, or maybe it's completely separate. I don't really know.
I'm curious to find out. And we read up to chapter 26 for those of you who are following along.
Yes. It is funny, though, to think about how, because it isn't like a trilogy or even a duology, all the plot points, at least, should ideally be wrapped up by the end of this book. And we're like halfway through. And I sort of feel like it's kind of slow so far. I don't know if you feel that way at all. And I think a lot of that is having to establish, like, it kind of makes sense, but I sort of feel like we're about to get to like a bunch of action happening all at once.
Yeah, I mean, well, we left off right before their village was raided. So we left off, like, at the cusp of, like, some big action happening. I don't think I would say it's been slow for me. I think it's definitely been a little tamer just because we came from Jay Kristoff's Nevernight series, which was very intense. So I think, like, anything after that series would strike us as a little, like, slower paced and, like, not as intense, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. And maybe slow is the wrong word, because I don't think of it as a negative. I just feel like we've been very, we're more, like, character focused right now than we are super plot focused right now, which isn't bad. And I think it's what we need is, or I'm assuming this main character is going through, like, a internal transformation that's going to impact how she handles this, like, external conflict of her brother being with the rival tribe and her dad being back home with the tribe she grew up with and them going to war every 5 years and whatnot. But yeah, it's just like she got kidnapped pretty fast and she's still just like trying to, I don't know, she's still a slave, I guess, or what do they call it?
D-Y-R? Dir?
Yeah. This is when we should audiobook it.
I know. do you want to talk about the characters first?
Yeah. Okay. Sounds good.
So the main character is Aelin, and she is part of the Aska clan. And it opens up, I like the way it opened up. I think it did a really nice job of, like, setting the scene and establishing the characters. Because we see Aelin with her fighting partner, Mira. They're fighting the enemy clan, the Riki. And the big action that happens is she's about to be killed when her long-lost brother, Eerie, steps in. And the last time she saw him was 5 years ago, and he was lying dead in the snow. So he's back.
Yeah, not even long-lost brother. Dead brother. Yes. Yes. And, yeah, I guess it's interesting. I sort of feel like I still have a lot of questions about how she was raised. I really liked that beginning piece when we, like, sort of heard a little bit about, you know, the fact that her mother and her brother had both died. Her mother was killed in a raid by a different enemy, not the Riki, right? Some other, like, group that appeared in their village or something like that.
Right. It was the Herja.
Yeah.
A different clan, right.
And she's made some references to, you know, learning how to fight, and you get the sense that this is, like, so important to their identity that they go to this war every 5 years, and there's a little bit about her religion and her thoughts on, like, the god and the afterlife and the little, like, statues or whatever she has for her mom and her brother,
the idols. Yeah,
but I also feel like, because so quickly we started in the middle of the war, like you said, or in the middle of this battle, and very quickly she ends up following who she thinks is her brother, even though she thinks he's dead, and gets captured by the rival clan, the Riki clan. And then we sort of like learn more about her by watching her observe this rival clan and see the similarities. Mm-hmm. And I sort of wish instead we had seen a little bit of her life before.
Before. Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, because everything we learn now is kind of like a flashback, like, oh, when I was back with my dad in my home clan, yeah.
And I guess it's I have a lot of questions about her brother.
Okay.
So
tell me your questions, and I'll see if I can answer them. Well, probably not.
Well, I guess questions is maybe the wrong word. So I was very curious why he didn't come home in the first place. So I guess he fell over this cliff mid-fight, and mm-hmm. his clan thought he was dead and left the body behind because that's what they usually do. And Fisk, the guy who he was fighting who fell over with him, his dad came and like rescued both of them basically and brought them mm-hmm. and like nursed him back to health.
Yes.
And throughout that period of being nursed back to health, he was sort of treated like family and accepted by the community. But then why did he, I like sort of get, he like fell in love, I guess, and like appreciated this. But why would you go and like fight the other people?
That's a good question.
Like, I sort of get maybe not going back, but I don't really get going back to, like, kill...
fighting a war against your people.
Yeah. So I think that's why I have so many questions about what life was like before. Was it bad where she... Like, is this a better place? Because I sort of think they're just the same. Or not the same, but, like...
Well, that's part of something that Aelin is discovering, is that they're so similar. As she's with this rival clan, she keeps realizing like how similar they are. So that's a good question. Like, I get that Fisk and Uri were down on, in that, like over that cliff for quite some time before they were found. And so they kind of like were bolstering each other up, being like, we're not going to die here. We're going to be okay. And that was part of why Fisk wanted his father to save Uri, because they'd been there so long that he, by the time he was mm-hmm. rescued, he was like, you can't leave this other guy behind. And I think that definitely created a bond between them. And, like, you see Fisk calls Uri his brother, like, when he meets him.
Yep.
And he definitely feels like he's part of his family. But that's a good question, because it's only been 5 years since the last raid. And 5 years doesn't seem like a long enough time to not only forget your family, but start to view them as enemies and going to fight against them, knowing you might see your sister on that battlefield again.
I was going to say, and it's, yeah, it's not like, you know, your sister was training to be a warrior. Yeah. And I would think a lot of your friends and, you know, your dad, and like, again, I can see the connection he's made with the new family, and I could even see him not wanting to go back, especially if he's fallen in love yeah. and wants to start a family. But the part that I'm having trouble with is, like, what makes him go back as a warrior and killing?
Well, I guess I want to read that battle scene again now, because she is fighting Fisk in the main opener, yes. and he's about to kill her.
Yes.
And she only sees Uri when he steps in to stop Fisk from killing her. So it's not clear if Uri was actually taking part in the battle, or if he was just came with the clan and like was standing back. Like, we don't really know what role he played in that battle.
I guess that's fair. He was honored at the like religious ceremony afterwards, though, as participating. But I guess you're right. We haven't actually seen him like kill one of his old clan's people, so possibly it's like a ruse or something. But
no, that's a good question.
Even if that's true, I feel like that would be something to tell your sister. Like, hey, I'm not killing all of our friends.
Right. I think...
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it is... I think it's possible to, like, build a relationship with an enemy clan the way he did. But I think it's... I have a harder time believing that he just, like, gave up on his sister because she left him to die, I guess. I mean, that's the other thing. Like, they mm-hmm. were... We learned that Aelin and Uri were fighting partners. And Uri kind of uses the justification as, like, well, I'm with the Riki now because the Asuka left me to die and the Riki brought me to life. So I think part of him maybe feels abandoned that his clan kind of just left him there to die. And that might play into it a bit.
Yeah. And I guess, I mean, I do kind of have just mixed feelings, because if it would have been one thing if like he had been calling for help and they were like, sorry, we can't get down there. It's not worth it. But like, I honestly believe that they thought he was dead, and their custom is to leave the dead people on the battlefield. And I'm not saying that makes it right or whatever, but, and I guess also, what, they were like 12 and 13
mm-hmm.
5 years ago. So you know, that's a very impressionable age, but I don't know. It just something about, I either feel like there's like a secret, especially because him and Fisk are so like secretive about other stuff. And it's like the community knows that he was originally part of the Asuka tribe. And now they've brought, like, I sort of, this goes back to that idea that we have with multiple books where I'm like, why are they even keeping a secret? Why don't they just say this is my sister and so I don't want to kill her?
Yeah, especially since, like, now the secret of who Aelin is coming out. So, like, Eri's adopted mother, Inge, she knows who Aelin is now, and his fiance, Runa, knows. So, mm-hmm. like, that secret's going to get out. And they keep saying, like, oh, no one can know or else they'll kill Fisk and Eri. And I'm just like, okay, why? Like, she's...
I know, I don't get that.
She's a slave now.
It would
be
one thing if they still thought that he... If they didn't know he was also an Asuka, like, I could see that would ruin his undercoverness. But they all know and accepted him already.
And I don't know why it would be like, we took one in, taking another one in is like, no way. That would be too much.
Yeah. So I'm just curious. I think we'll get... Mm-hmm. I still feel like there's a lot of conversation that hasn't happened between her and her brother yet. So I'm, like, hoping that more of this is revealed in time. But I have just a lot of questions because I find certain aspects of their relationship really, really believable. And certain aspects, I just... Again, it's not even that I don't find it believable, but I just feel like there's these secrets being kept and I just want all the information where I'm like, just tell her, you know, X, or like, ask him why or whatever.
Yeah, totally. But I guess I do really like, I love the idea of like the trope of like rival clans and how they meet every 5 years to like settle this blood rivalry between them. And I also love the idea of like Aelin living with these people and like slowly getting to know them, especially with the little boy.
My favorite.
I know. I like him too. And it's just like, you know, how can you not love someone like that? A cute little boy like that. And when you see how loving Inge is to Eri, I think it's kind of nice seeing Aelin realize that their clan is not very different from her own.
Yep.
But that being said, there's still some not so very nice people in this clan, like that crazy man Thorpe who attacks her and then ties her to a tree and cuts her shirt off so she'll freeze to death, and then how the clan leader saw that happen and like didn't do anything to stop him.
Oh man, yeah, this is where the, to your point about like we just finished the J. Kristoff novel, I was sort of like, oh, that wasn't as bad as I thought it was.
I know, that book like scarred us.
I know. I was like, oh, she was just left to freeze in the wilderness and people ignored witnessing it. Like, that's not so bad.
We've seen worse.
Oh, my goodness. Mm. Yeah, and I think that that is really interesting because we see both the clan's people, even though she sees similarities between them, they view her as the enemy. And, you know, she probably killed, or people she knows killed people that they loved. Mm-hmm. And she's still struggling, even though she's starting to see these similarities with this whole, I mean, especially with her brother and his, like, feeling betrayed by him, but just this general idea of she's been raised her whole life to view this group of people as the enemy. And it's not just even like a random story, like they really do go to war every 5 years, and her identity is as a warrior. She's been training to kill them since she could walk, you know, and it is kind of crazy to, I think that is very believable. Like I don't feel like she's like come over 100%. I think we see her like growing and struggling with it and kind of taking steps forward and backward at the same time.
It's a gradual kind of growth.
Yeah.
And you know what is kind of cool is I was reading some interviews with Adrienne Young, and she said that the main takeaway she wanted people to get from this book was that you should never be afraid to change your mind or change your opinions. And she said she was talking about like big foundational beliefs that are like essential to who you are, because she said a couple years ago she went through kind of a period where she had to adjust some of her core beliefs because she had been taught or raised one way and then realized that she didn't subscribe to those beliefs anymore. And it was, to her, she said it was like a very scary period where she was like breaking away from the stuff that she knew and had to kind of like start new and develop her own way of thinking and her own perspective. And she said like it was really scary, but in the end she was a lot stronger for it. And so I thought that was kind of cool that she, like, took this personal experience and put it into a book to say, like, you may grow up with certain beliefs or hold certain views, but don't be afraid to change your mind if you start to not believe in them anymore, which I think is brave.
Yeah, that's such an important, yeah. So much of your identity ends up being your beliefs, yeah. And so many of your beliefs as when you're young come from what you're told or what you see in your, like, immediate vicinity. So, yeah, it's really hard to recognize and grow when you find that the world doesn't line up with all of those things. So it also reminds me just of, you know, that idea that people who read fiction are more empathetic than people who don't read fiction.
Oh, that's interesting. I believe that.
And, like, kids reading, like, Harry Potter, it actually, like, teaches them to be, like, more accepting of people who are different than you because of, like, all the stuff with, like, muggles and half-bloods and yada yada, you know. And I feel like something similar, like, if you were a young adult reading this book and, like, if that's your takeaway, like, what a wonderful time in your life to learn that lesson and maybe not have to do it all the hard way.
Agreed.
But, like, learn it through another character's experience.
And I also loved and appreciated that the main character is a woman who is a warrior, but it's never called into question.
Like, her gender is not an aspect of the fact that she's a warrior. Is that what you mean?
Exactly. Yeah. Because, like, in a lot of other books you've read, like, even in the Nevernight Chronicles, like, Mia was constantly, like, having to prove that she was a good fighter despite her femaleness. Mm-hmm. And in this story, you don't see that happen. And Adrienne Young said that she wanted to tell a story about a warrior who was a girl without having to, like, justify it in any way. And so she picked this setting to kind of show that, like, yeah, women were warriors and it wasn't questioned and that was just accepted as norm. And she didn't have to, like, do any background about, like, she had to prove that she was a good warrior even though she was female. It was just very commonplace, which I really liked.
Yeah, and even the comments about her being, like, small, it's not that she's female or that she's too small or anything. It's sort of like, she's small and she's fast and that's how she fights. That's her fighting style. And, like, her fighting partner is another female and they are in the front lines because they've, like, fought their way up to that point and it's no one's questioning whether they deserve to be there or anything like that. Very cool. Which actually reminds, this book, as I even read the back, I think it was talking about how it, like, is related to Viking culture or part Viking stuff. And I actually did a little bit of research on Vikings and specifically female Vikings.
Oh, cool. I did a little bit of research on Vikings, too, but not specifically female ones. So tell me what you found.
Well, so I actually, like, read a couple of things that said while the Vikings were, like, women were important in, like, settling certain areas, there was a lot of questions about whether they actually were warriors or not. Mm-hmm. And there was this one big burial. So I guess kind of related how they bury their dead was something else I looked into a little bit, but they a lot of times would burn, you know, do a funeral pyre, whatever that's called, where they burn people, kind of like that pagan belief of smoke carries them to the afterlife or whatever.
Okay. Carries your soul. Yeah.
But they also would do some graves or burial mounds, and there was a lot related to ships. So they'd either, like, make the mound look like a ship with different, like, stones and stuff around it to outline what a ship shape is, or even sometimes for certain, like, highly ranked Vikings that needed to be honored, they would actually be buried with their boats.
Oh, cool.
And there was these two women who died in 834 A.D., had one of these very extravagant boat burials, like one of the most elaborate ones we've found since, known as the Osberg ship. And it's just, like, really well preserved and stuff. So they learned a lot about it. And there were two women in it. So they were like, oh, there's still a lot of debate. Like, this means that they were warriors. But a lot of the things they found on the boat weren't necessarily, like, they didn't find a lot of weapons and things like that, which would have been typical for a warrior burial. Hmm. So they found it was 70 feet long, 17 feet wide. It had 15 oars on each side, a pine mast more than 30 feet high, and was spacious enough to fit 30 people.
That's huge.
Yeah, isn't that, like, crazy?
And they sent it out to sea with her in it and burnt it? Is that what they did?
So that's kind of what the belief was, but actually most of them were not sent. Like, I think the stereotypical idea is, yeah, the ship goes out to sea and then you have, like, the fiery arrows that you shoot from shore and light it up. They said, like, because it was so expensive to build those boats or something. I don't know why, because I think they still buried them in it. So I'm not exactly sure how all of that worked. But then they found a different warrior burial that they hadn't, when they initially found it, they just assumed it was a man because it had all the weapons and everything else that was very typical of men. And later on, like several years later, someone was going through some of the descriptions and thought the skeleton sounded like it might be female. So they ended up doing a DNA analysis of the skeleton. And they confirmed that it was a woman who is older than 30 years and was between 5 and 6 feet tall. And she was buried with, like, the armor-piercing arrows and a battle knife and a spear and an axe and shields and, like, all the things that were very common for the warriors to be buried with. And they also said she was buried with a full set of game pieces and a gaming board, which probably signaled that she was actually a really high-ranking official who, like, knew strategies and different tactics and things like that. So this is...
like a general, almost.
Yeah. So they said, like, this is the first formal genetic confirmation that there were at least some female Viking warriors. So even though there was a lot of controversy beforehand about the role women played in Viking culture, this is proof that at least one of them not only was a warrior, but, like, was probably a pretty highly ranked, respected warrior.
And was honored when she died. Oh, I love that.
Yeah, so the grave was originally uncovered in the late 19th century, but again, they just assumed it was a male at first and never, like, questioned the skeleton. And then later, someone from Stockholm University kind of reviewed the skeleton as part of some other project and thought that it looked like it might be a woman, and they did the DNA test and there were no Y chromosomes present. So, and they had seen, there have been other burials where they have found weapons and females, but there's also the belief, or part of the burial rite is that when a warrior dies, he's buried with all of his possessions. So that does include the weapons, but also could include slaves. So if he had female slaves, it was hard to distinguish, like, if it was a female slave. Or, so this is kind of like the first, like, for sure thing, I guess, that they...
that it was actually a warrior woman, yeah, and not a slave. Ooh, that's awful.
Yeah, I mean, it was also common, I guess, to think of slaves as property back then, but... and I don't know if they were killed for it, or if they had died already, or what. Yeah, that one, the Osberg ship, or whatever, with the two women on it, also had 13 horses, two dogs, two oxen, a four-wheel wooden cart, three beds, wooden chests, four wooden sledges, and a variety of other items indicating a high influence, but no weapons.
That's so interesting. But that also makes me think of, like, when Aelin was so upset when she was made a slave, and how she, to her, it was like she would never be accepted into the underworld. Like, her god would not recognize her anymore. Her father would not recognize her anymore. Like, it basically, to her, was like losing all of her honor.
Well, yeah. Honor before was more important than living, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, she would have rather died than give up her honor this way. And especially, like, serving the enemy.
Yeah. That's rough.
You know, which is also, like, I'm actually curious to see if she does escape and gets home, maybe before she's done a complete 180, mm-hmm. if her family or the community kind of rejects her because she was a slave.
Yeah,
for the
and she
group,
has this collar.
Or if
now.
Something will happen before. Yeah. Which also was just, I can't imagine, especially being a warrior and growing up with these beliefs, going through some of the stuff she went through, like being kidnapped and forced into slavery and the way people are treating her. And
pretty rough. I found some interesting things about Vikings, too, in my research. I thought this was really interesting. So, they said that, Adrian Young said that she based this book off of Viking folklore and, like, Norse mythology, but she made everything up. So, like, none of the names in this book are, like, correlate at all to Norse mythology, but she tried to keep, like, the sentiment the same.
Okay.
But I think this is interesting because they said that back then the term Viking was not used. Like, they didn't call themselves Vikings. They were just...
It was a bunch of different groups, too, right, who were given that name by outsiders?
Yes.
Like, they were all united.
Right, and they weren't. Like, they were... Basically, it was just like a patchwork of different tribes led by chiefs that often fought against each other, kind of very similar to this book. So it wasn't like... they were this united clan of Vikings. Like, they didn't have that unity. They often fought against each other, and they were just, like, little patchworks of tribes everywhere that were referred to collectively as, like, Norsemen or Danes or things like that, but not Vikings.
I also think I read somewhere that Viking actually stood for, like, Northern Pirate or something in some language, and that was, like, again, just, like, a collective name, not that they identified with, but that was, like, sort of assigned to them by... like other Europeans or whatever.
Or like Christians too, because I read that Vikings actually never wore horned helmets. Like, you know how Vikings are always like portrayed as like the horned
helmets? Yeah, that's exactly how I picture them.
That was a detail that Christians in Europe added to make the Vikings look barbaric. So basically they painted them with horns on their head to kind of represent like Satan. Like these barbaric tribes are like spawn of the devil, and they like literally gave them devil's horns, but they did not have helmets like that.
That's so funny too when you think about like images that become popular and how they're actually not based on reality at all.
Yeah, not one bit. But they did engage in some questionable practices though, especially I guess they were known to abandon sickly children. So if like a Viking child was born and it wasn't healthy, they would often leave them alone in the wilderness to die or just threw them into the sea.
Oh, man.
So, like, physical strength was valued.
Like, if they were born sick or if they became sick even?
It just says that they were known to abandon sickly children. So I think, like, if they had, like, a failure to thrive or if they were born deformed or if something happens, like, that they were grievously injured young, they might be abandoned.
So, I wouldn't survive anyways in a culture that values strength and the body and physical achievement.
Oh, no, me either. But you would be valued because I also read that being blonde to a Viking was very important.
Oh.
Especially well, that's good. Among the men.
Huh. So why did they think that? Was it like linked to their gods or something? Or?
That's a really good question. I have no idea why. But they have records of like Viking men, if they were brunette, would go to like extreme lengths to lighten their hair. So they would use like soap with like a really high lye content to bleach their hair in the sun to like produce a desired color, which I think is funny.
That is funny. I also read, this is just a random fact too, that I saw that Vikings, like a traditional wedding gift was to give the brides kittens.
A kitten?
Because they like, yeah, so that just seems like really counter assumptions made about the Vikings, where they'd like give baby cats to help a new household get started because they thought it was like essential to the household to have cats or
That's
something.
That's so sweet. Yeah, you think they'd give them like a battle axe or something. Like, look, here's a little kitten.
Or like a dead cat, or I don't know. And they also said, just back to Viking women, that especially compared to like the rights that women had in Christian Europe, even if maybe they weren't a ton of warriors, or maybe they were, but they also had the ability to divorce, remarry, own property, and sit as the head of the familial clan.
Oh.
So, like, Viking women were given a lot more, like, equal
freedoms,
rights or power. Yeah.
That's good to
which
know.
Which is kind of cool. Yeah. Which kind of goes back to this book, too, where, like we said, like, her gender is not the issue. It's the fact that she's part of a rival clan
right.
that people have problem with. Yeah.
Exactly. So that was all my research.
I didn't do a ton either this time.
Okay, what was your favorite scene so far?
That is a great question. I think maybe seeing like that ceremony, just because I think like the ceremony where they were like had the flowers and then honoring the warriors and whatnot could have been interesting. Or the battle I feel like would be exciting, but I don't think I would want to actually see more gory battle stuff. I don't know, what about you?
I think my favorite scenes so far have been her interacting with the new clan and just getting to know them a little bit more. Like, who's the woman who's about to have the baby?
Oh yeah, what is her name?
Gerda. Mm-hmm. I really think that her relationship with her husband is kind of complicated because isn't her husband the one who, Curling, who like lost his leg?
Yep. And feels useless. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think like it's kind of interesting seeing her just like see the struggles that this clan's going through and like realizing that like they have a lot of similar values to her own clan and just like getting closer to them. I've enjoyed that.
Also, isn't the baby like being delivered right now in the middle of this raid?
Yep. Yep.
Things are happening.
See how that goes. Go ahead.
No, I just am looking at my other random Viking facts and this one was kind of funny. So remember how she was like, what's the little kid's name? Herling?
Harvel.
Yeah. And he asked her, like, how did you light that fire or whatever? I'm very curious about that. Well, I guess the Vikings also did have a way to quickly light fire. They had a very unique fire starter that they made from fungus that they boiled for days Ooh. In their own urine.
What?
I guess that stuff's flammable.
Ah, I believe it. That stuff's potent. Ew. Well, I also read that Vikings were really known for, like, having great personal grooming habits.
Hmm.
Like, they have, they had a lot of tools that they used for personal grooming. And if, like, you think about Vikings and you think about, like, their huge manes of hair, like, they had to have had something to keep that under control.
Yeah, I actually feel like I think of, like, beautiful heads of hair, right? Like, yeah. luscious locks.
And I'm sure they weren't using hair masks.
And again, but it's funny to think about, because back then, like, civilized, quote-unquote, society did not bathe regularly right. or do any of that stuff. So that's kind of funny. I also read that the Louvre mm-hmm. in Paris was originally built to act as a fortress against Viking raids.
Whoa. So
that's like, why they built it. They kind of cool.
built a glass pyramid.
I don't know about the specific architectural features of it, because that might have come later. Okay, I have another question for you.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Fisk, does he love Eerie like a brother, or does he love him more than that?
Ah, that was my question, too. I felt like there was more to it than just loving him as a brother.
I did, too.
Personally. Yeah, I got that vibe.
So I'm curious.
But then I thought that Eerie returned his sentiment and then realized that he was engaged to Runa. And so I was like, oh, okay, well.
And Fisk doesn't seem upset or threatened by that. And he does seem more threatened by, like, him having a sister that he, I don't know. So maybe it is just truly brotherly love, but I felt like, okay, so at least I wasn't the only one picking up that possibly there's more there.
No, I thought that too. But then I also thought that, like, I guess I would think that your relationship to your battle partner yeah. would be stronger than just brother, too. Like, that would be a really, really strong relationship. So maybe it's just that.
And maybe it just seems weird to me, because if he truly thinks of him as a brother, but I'm still thinking of him as, like, brother-like, you know? Like, I mean, like, I'm sort of like, you're not his actual yeah. brother. But if he truly feels that he is, and maybe it is just this, like, protective thing where they almost died together, and yeah, they fight together, and he's, like, seen mm-hmm. him and worried about him and whatever.
The other fact that I learned about this book that astounded me was, I was reading a little bit about how Adrienne Young wrote this book.
Mm-hmm.
She wrote it in 4 weeks.
What? How? What's her yeah. process? Can I learn that?
I was astounded when I read that, because, I mean, it's not like a super short book. I mean, it's definitely shorter than some of the other YA books we've read, but, like, it's still 300 and some pages, like 335 pages.
And it's still pretty creative, I think. Like, I mean, totally. Even the fact that it's loosely based on Norse mythology, but also created her own flavor of it and stuff. I feel like that takes work.
Yeah. And it's well written. It's not like it's poorly written, but she said she wrote it in 4 weeks, revised it in 2, and it sold within 6 weeks of her writing it.
Wow.
Like, I don't understand how you do that. It takes me, like, an hour sometimes to write a sentence.
Well, and I remember I was reading, I don't even remember where this was. I was reading something that was basically like, people make writing books harder than it has to be. And I didn't really believe this whole article, but it said something like, they tell you to spend an hour writing the first sentence and then spend another hour turning it into the first paragraph. And, like, you don't, and I think that maybe is overkill sometimes, or at least, like, not every sentence has to take an hour, but I can't imagine building a world that quickly.
No, me either. And just, or even just, like, having a clear view of what you want to have happen.
And, like, believable, like, characters. Plotting. And yeah. Yeah. Wow, that's very impressive.
It was incredibly impressive. And she has 4 kids.
Oh, well, she's got plenty of free time then. Just kidding. Wow.
It's amazing.
So what is her background? So she's been writing but hasn't been published before? Or do you know, did she have another side job? Or was she busy parenting? Or do you know anything else about her?
She said she was a full-time mom.
Mm-hmm.
And then did a lot of writing. And she said she wrote a bunch of books and sent them out to publishers and didn't hear back. And then she got really lucky with this one. But, I mean, it was a process, she said, of, like, writing, being rejected, writing another book, being rejected. So, like, she's definitely written more books than just this one. But this is the only one that's been published so far.
It's, like, crazy. I have so much respect for authors anyways. But then also just, like, the resilience that it requires to, like, pour your heart into a book and have it rejected and then start over and do it again. Like, in some way, I don't... I don't know which would be harder, like to really believe in your first book and like keep trying and it take years before someone takes it seriously, or to just start over and write like a new book and leave the first book behind. And like, I don't know, they both sound so hard.
I think it would be really hard to scrap it.
Anyone who gets published, regardless of what I think of your book, I respect your journey.
Same here. It does not sound easy. Was there anything else you wanted to talk about for this first half of the book?
I don't know. Do you want to talk about predictions? So okay. Who do we think is raiding? At first, I thought maybe it was her clan like trying to come get her, but I don't think it is, right? Because they can't get to her.
I think it's that clan that killed her mom.
Yeah. So I forget what they're called now, but...
The Herja.
They also were thought to be like a legend. Like people did... So it's not like a clan that they... I'm like kind of confused. I sort of want a map about like who's allies with who, because... both the Riki and the Asuka were, like, basically, like, kind of acting like they didn't even believe this other clan existed until they came, like, out of the mist, and then they, like, disappeared again.
Right.
Which sounds horrifying.
Yeah, that really does. A bunch of ghost Vikings.
Like, you don't even know your enemy's coming, and yeah, and then they kill your mom and disappear.
Yeah. And I'm curious to know more about this clan, because I like how the two clans that we know are, like, very established, like, the Riki believe in the god Thora, and the Asuka believe in the god Sigur, and they have, like, these very established beliefs, so I'm just curious about, like, where this other third clan fits in, and here's my prediction.
Okay.
My prediction is this rival clan attacks the Herja. Now I keep losing it.
Herja, yeah.
The Herja attack, and... The Riki and the Asuka realize that, like, this third clan is actually the one they need to be fighting. And I think somehow the two clans come together and, like, unite against this new common enemy.
Okay, here's what other small things I predict. I think Aelin is going to, in the midst of the fighting, have a chance to run away or go home or do something. And instead will defend someone in the family.
Oh.
Slash someone in the family dies in this raid. I can't decide which one I think is more likely to happen.
Oh, I hope it's not the little boy.
I know. This isn't Jay Kristoff, so maybe everyone will live.
We'll live. and she's then, not going to just kill everyone.
It's really interesting because part of me sort of agrees with you, and the other part of me kind of thinks that it would be a little bit of a, oh, you're not the enemy and you're not the enemy, but we still have this other enemy of humans out there. Like, part of me wants them to, like, find peace without finding a common enemy, if that makes sense. So I'm kind of curious, and especially with the fact that it's tied into their religion, like the reason they fight every 5 years is because their gods are mad at each other or whatever.
Yeah.
So, and I don't know how they would even I don't like disagree with you. I'm just trying to like think, how do we get from where we are right now to the two clans working together? It would have to involve her going back and trying to convince her, I guess, maybe. Sorry, I'm like thinking out loud at the same time. Okay, I maybe buy it.
Okay.
But then where are the Herja? How do we even find them to go to battle with them?
They just wait for them to appear out of the mist.
And if we defeat them, then are the Riki and the Asuka still friends, or are they go back to being enemies?
I think they stop being enemies.
And I think Eerie's wedding will happen at the end of the book, and his dad will be there. That's my other prediction.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Happy ending.
Nice little family reunion. So we're going for a happy ending in this. I would like to see that happen.
It's so interesting. It feels like it's been a long time since I've read, again, not that this is a short book, but because we've been reading, like, series with 2 to 4 books in them, I sort of am like, oh, we only have 150 pages to wrap up everything. Which I know, I guess we say that even in our series, but it also just, it feels like, I don't know how big it can get or how, I don't know. I'm just curious.
Yeah, we only have 200 pages left, so...
Like, part of me feels like I could totally see this being a series where, like, at the end, she believes that they need to unite the clans, but, like, the uniting hasn't happened yet, and that could be, like, a book 2 or even book 2 and 3 or something like that. But, I don't know. I guess you're right. I feel like they can't be enemies at the end of the day.
I hope not.
The Riki and the Asuka. But I feel like you also have to address the mythology behind it, so... They'd have to, like, feel like their gods were, like, telling them it's okay.
It's
or,
okay.
Like, something where they either reject their gods or, like, bring peace for the gods or I don't know.
I have no idea. That would make it a little bit bigger. But yeah, I think it could, I feel like this could be a multiple book series too.
Yeah, and I do like the characters. I think I framed it wrong, but I really like that we've been very character focused, and I'm always interested in complex sibling relationships. So I love that, like, her brother cares for her and is trying to protect her, but also did kind of like totally betray her. At least that's how it feels right now, because not only did he let her think he was dead, but he came back and is fighting with the enemy. And
yeah, you can see how she would feel very betrayed by that.
Yeah. I mean, I still feel betrayed on her. Like, again, I don't necessarily disagree with him. I like really hope we find out more that he like has, maybe he's already trying to unite the clan somehow. And we're going to like get pulled into that. And it's all been a ruse about whatever, but I don't know. I want them to be friends. Also, okay, another question.
Okay, go ahead.
Sorry, I'm thinking back to things now. So when Aelin first saw her brother and was kind of told by her dad that it was probably his spirit, like, protecting her, are you surprised that she had so much trouble believing that if she really believed he was dead? / do you think the dad knew more than he was letting on, or do you think he really believed that it was the spirit?
Oh, do you mean, do I think maybe her dad secretly suspects that Eri's alive?
Yeah.
I don't think he thinks he's alive, because I feel like if he thought he was alive, he would be looking for him.
That's fair. Yeah. I don't really think he thinks he's alive either, but I sort of found it interesting that she didn't just accept that it was, like, if she really believed he was dead, I sort of feel like the first time she saw him, she should have bought that explanation a little bit more, because it feels very in line with her religion, and then maybe the second time she saw him, still be curious. And I guess she kind of did. She sort of, like, was on the fence, but kind of believed it, and that's why she chased him the second time, I suppose. I don't know. I'm rambling.
Well, we'll find out.
Okay. Yeah.
Is it my turn to tell a joke, or is it yours?
I honestly don't remember. Do you have a joke?
I've got one.
Okay, let's hear it.
It's a Viking joke.
Perfect.
Okay. What are the only notes Vikings can sing?
C?
Yeah, high C.
Oh!
You got it!
Yay! I feel like I heard a Viking joke the other day. Let me see if I can remember it. It was something like, I'm probably going to give it away when I ask it. Let's see. How did Vikings use secret messages back and forth? What code did Vikings use to send secret messages back and forth?
Norse code?
Yeah, Norse code.
That's good. Okay, well, I'm excited to keep reading.
Yeah, me too. I'm enjoying this world. I really hope, again, I'm curious what companion novel means in this case, but I'm hoping it's at least the same world.
Me too.
But I don't know.
Because it would be too soon to leave it after just one book.
I know. Yeah. And I do, I like her writing. So I think she also actually has a YA duology coming out at some point.
Yes, she does. It's called Fable.
So depending on how this goes and when those come out, maybe we'll talk about that in the future.
That'd be great.
Cool.
If you guys want to get in touch with us, send us some Viking jokes, you can email us at mnktalkya@gmail.com.
Or on Instagram and Facebook at mnktalkya. I have another question for you. Do we have to come up with a fan name next week, or do we do it at the end of the series now?
I almost said tomorrow. Yes, we have to come up with a fan name tomorrow.
Yesterday.
Ooh, that's might be okay. Tough.
We'll think about that.
Yeah, puts us on a quicker timeline.
Okay. Anything else?
I'm good.
Bye, bookworms.
Go get a library card.
M&K Talk YA is produced and edited by Marissa Snyder and Katie Bradford. Original music composition by Timothy Milkey. Logo design by Marissa Snyder. For updates and extras, visit mnktalkya.com or follow us on Instagram and Facebook. And if you haven't already, please rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. We would like to thank James Tobias, Chad Snyder, Meredith Kelfi, and Michael Howard for all of their support. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.